Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to The Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is September, I think it's like, this is the 18th?
Today's the 6th, but this is Wednesday? Today's the 16th. Today's the 16th, because Friday's the 18th.
Oh, shit, okay. I was early.
Over.
Yeah. Oh, summer's done. That's done. That's over.
Nigga, the year is done. It's October.
Here she go. Thanksgiving.
It is October.
It's the middle of September. Now I got it. Thanksgiving. Now I'm here buying cranberry
October.
Sauce and sweet potatoes.
First of all, I still have cranberry. First of all, I have cranberry sauce in my cabinet, and I have my Pepperidge Farm stuffing mix ready to go. But
so disappointing. You use a mix.
No, I only use the crusted, the herb breadcrumbs. Everything else I use from, I do fresh vegetables chopped and strain the sauce and do the sausage and do all that other stuff. But I'm not toasting and cutting no bread, my nigga. Like, it's not that. My sister does that shit. I'm like, why would you do that? That's the way Nana do it. I'm like, why would you do that when Pepperidge Farm has perfectly good herb?
Because Big Mama ain't do it that way.
I ain't got time for that part.
I'm
just messing with you. I definitely cut up some Jiffy for mine. So
I'll do the rest.
But the Jiffy is the go-to though.
Right.
Jiffy is the joint.
Jiffy gonna start flying off the shelves in about 2 weeks.
Right.
You should already have your Jiffy in place.
Already to go.
You should already have always have Jiffy in the house. Yeah, that's something that you're just always supposed to have in the house.
That's a staple.
You have some Jiffy in the house.
You might have got laid.
That Jiffy stretched out. Them joints be 4 boxes for $1. You good to go.
Watch Good Time.
I do.
How many episodes is cornbread and greens?
Word. Listen, every episode.
Them little corn muffins. My mom used to make Jiffy corn muffins. Them shit used to be so good. But yeah, Jiffy's a staple. Grits are a staple. I was realizing at the beginning of shutdown, I don't know if we talked about this, when I was thinking about how all of us grew up, big ass, if you grew up in a house with space, there was always a second refrigerator and a second freezer on the back porch or in the basement.
We had the second freezer. It was next to
So you had the floor, the floor freezer on the back porch, and usually also a second refrigerator on the back porch. My great grandmother had the upright freezer and a regular big ass freezer. She had two. And then there were always canned preserves in a pantry. And I had never really understood that was about really being prepared for moments of lack until we went into shutdown. Yeah. And I was like, when it first happened and we didn't know how long it was going to be and we didn't know if the stores were going to be open, I was like, damn, I need a big freezer so I could just throw that shit
in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And be one of those people who still have greens in my freezer from last Thanksgiving, my cousins and them would do. They'd be having greens from Thanksgiving 1993. I got this dressing from 2007 if you want to.
Throw it out. We can heat it up. You know what I'm saying?
We got these porgies that we caught in 2014 before Earl died. Exactly. They in the back of the freezer.
They still frozen. They be all right. Throw them out. Leave them out there for a day.
Jimmy bought that deer meat up. It's in the brown paper bag.
Just put it in the crock pot.
Way up in the back.
Put it in the crock pot. Said that shit.
Speaking of Good Times, I wanted to mention, speaking of Good Times, I saw that they're going to be trying to do an animated reboot of Good Times.
I'm concerned.
Who asked for that?
Nobody. The executive producers are Seth MacFarlane, who does Family Guy.
Absolutely not.
What do you do? He's just Family Guy. He did
American Dad.
American Dad. He did the Ted movie. He's done a bunch of things on TV.
He did the Cleveland show. Wait, Sean, say again.
I said almost every popular adult animation since
except The Simpsons. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And Boondocks.
And then Steph Curry is the other executive producer, which I was like, oh.
And I don't understand how Seth Curry and Seth MacFarlane go together, right? Because Steph Curry,
his brother. I know. He's not the one producing.
Steph Curry is so, like, Jesus-y and kind. And Seth MacFarlane is really cruel and fuck everything, right? Like, it's there's no reverence in anything that Seth MacFarlane does.
I don't know if Steph is as Jesus-y as he was when he first came to the league. Now, I'm saying, like, he's like a whole
person.
I'm
talking about, like, 3 years ago, that motherfucker.
Yeah, no. Nah, he seems to be a really good dude and, you know, involved in a lot of positive things, but I think there's if you watch him play, you see there is I don't want to call it dark necessarily, but there's an undertone. He's mean on the court. He's talking shit. He's pointing your face. He's clowning people. So again, it ain't like he's a horrible person, but I think he has a little bit of a edge, more of an edge than people kind of give him credit for. Maybe I'll say that.
I would call him a quality Christian, right? Like, he one of them Christians that do like 5-6 times a year. So, you know, he's going to do Easter.
Right.
And he's going to cut a big check to the church.
Definitely.
He's going to come shoot around with the kids if you need him to come and play with the kids for a little while. But he's definitely, I don't get every Sunday. I don't get if he got kids. Church. He definitely
don't got. You don't think he pays tithes?
No, I think he pays tithes because, you know, they coming for you, right?
But like, he ain't on a deacon board.
He ain't on a deacon board. He definitely don't have keys to the church. That's
fine.
Yeah. New van. They come to step, get them a new van. That sort of shit.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see, you know, what happens with this thing. So nobody asking for it, and you know the way black folks.
A production company.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he's got to put his money into something, so it makes sense. I'm just wondering.
No. He has. It's not like he's not like funding some random.
He's doing it.
Offshoot. Yes, they've had programming on air.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
His company was, I believe it was the golf. There's a golf sort of show that.
Yeah, because he's a big golf guy.
In like on ABC. So they've had a deal, and there are a ton of these pods out there now where these guys are leveraging their access and celebrity, right? Mm-hmm. And they go in and they, you know, wind down and have these conversations, and they make these connections, and they're looking to, you know, open up other doors, open up other avenues. A lot of these production deals are very much like that. So think of Music Biz in the 90s.
Okay. You know, so we'll see. A lot of that. Black folks.
But there's somebody else attached to the project who wasn't named in the announcement, and I can't remember his name, but apparently he's been part of some black shit. Okay. So that makes people feel a little
like it might be.
Is also very early on, and one of the things that I've learned is that a lot of these projects, they tend to make these sorts of announcements.
And then they never happen.
Listen, we've heard about Will Smith and Martin Lawrence remaking Uptown Saturday Night.
Oh yeah,
like 20 years.
Yeah. Kevin Hart got involved.
Kevin Hart got it now. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, we hear about these sorts of reboots because a lot of times they will come to some sort of agreement, right? Because the one person that hasn't said anything is Norman Lear, who last time I checked
is still chilling and might actually be tweeting right now somewhere.
You know,
like,
what I'm saying? So
incredibly cognizant.
Until we see
that
level, or, you know, there's some sort of distribution attachment, like a Netflix or streaming service or somebody has those rights. This is still very early on.
Also, like, we're still waiting. Wasn't the Boondocks supposed to be coming back? Didn't Aaron say? But I think I'm saying that to Sean's point.
Animation,
like, Aaron,
takes forever, though.
It does take a really long time. My biggest fear about an animated Good Times is that it's going to be the worst part of Good Times, which is the JJ show. Not the good part of Good Times when it was actually social commentary, but like when it just started being a bunch of opportunities for JJ to say, well, you know, what can I say, and walk around with a chicken hat.
What I'm hoping is that they clown a lot of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. This time, just make it like how ridiculous it was. Like, We'll see. But speaking of reboots, also a Fresh Prince reunion show is apparently being taped.
It's been taped.
Oh, it's been taped?
The 30th anniversary is like next Friday or something.
Okay, so it's coming out soon. There's pictures have been sent out with the whole cast.
That's not on HBO.
Including Dark Skin.
Don't say including, because Janet Huber, is taping Sitting Down with Will.
Let's be clear, the studio audience.
She's not even
right. They're sitting. Everybody else is on set, and then it's Janet. It says Janet and Will have a sit down conversation for the first time. Janet and Will.
Oh,
ain't gonna be no one scene, and I don't even know if they're reenacting an episode or if they're just all getting together because obviously James Avery is dead. I don't know how you do an episode of Fresh Prince with no Uncle Phil, unless you want to do, you know, an episode where Uncle Phil passed or something
Definitely do. That's what they come back for.
Uncle Phil passed, or the Mickey anniversary of Uncle Phil.
No, I forgot that child existed.
I don't remember.
She went to Mickey.
I have a feeling they may be just getting together to do, especially considering he's doing the conversation with Janet. I feel like it may be more of like a clip review family reunion joint because
with the Cosby Show,
with the Cosby Show, right? And they all got together. You know, Will does this Zoom, YouTube, IG Live, something conversations, and they all got together for James Avery's birthday. I want to say maybe or like a few weeks ago.
I feel like it was his birthday. Yeah,
and Will was saying it was the first time that they had all looked at some old footage like that in a really long time.
Yeah,
and I feel like that probably sparked
this
the idea for this and it being, you know, such a big end, like 30 years is a
long time.
Jesus, I feel old.
Did I never tell you my Daphne Maxwell story, did I?
Oh Lord Jesus,
you know, always got
no
story.
But I'm not surprised you have a Daphne.
I got a story. So I had went down to DC. I was like, get the hell that thing. Oh, some type of awards something, but it doesn't really matter. So I went down there. It was during the day, and I bought my home one of my best buddies, Mike. We went over to the thing and shit. We had it, and Daphne was there. I guess she was getting an award. I feel like it might have been a Kathy Hughes event. In DC, it usually is.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, so it was a nice event, whatever. Some hotels, really nice, blah, 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 blah. So this is years ago. So this is back when the music business, you could spend a little money.
Yeah.
So I actually had a limo. I had to stretch.
Big time.
Big baller. Pick me up to take me, like, I had to pick me up from the airport, took me to the thing, had him wait for me, take me back to the hotel. I think I went back to New York that day, regardless. So, me and Mike jump in the limo, we're about to go get something to eat or whatever, and we see Daphne Maxwell standing outside. So I was like, hey, Miss Maxwell, how you doing? We talk for a little bit. And we get in the car, and I realize she's waiting for her car. Car ain't coming. So I'm like, Miss Maxwell, you need a ride? And she was like, all right, bet. So she jumped in the ride. We talked for a long time. We stayed in that car about a half hour. I forget where she was staying, but kind of far away. And she was just dropping jewels on us about the business and her and her husband, Tim Reed, bought a whole bunch of land. I think out of Virginia. And they had they tried to kind of do what Tyler did. They tried to start their own.
They didn't try. They did.
They
just weren't as successful.
Yeah, they had a whole their own studio. And she was like, this is when they had first bought the land and stuff they were building. So she was dropping jewels.
And this was
that.
When Tim Reed was doing like Frank's Place or something like that.
Yeah. And I know Tim Reed III because he actually worked in music. So that also connected us too, because like, oh, I know your son and blah, blah, blah. She was really nice. Like, she's very beautiful. Really nice lady.
That's what I'll be telling when people be trying to play light skin on Viv. I'd be like, what we're not going to do is play Daphne Maxwell Reed. We are not going to do that.
Yeah. She's very smart, thorough. Like I said, her and Tim had this vision. Tim, like I know him, like had this vision. And like Sean said, they did it. It hasn't been as successful as Tyler, but they have done some stuff. Like I really, you know, it was only one time. Obviously, we only met her that one time, but like we had a really nice conversation in the car. Really enjoyed us. So Peace to Daphne Maxwell. Now, and
shout out to Daphne Maxwell. Reed.
Daphne Maxwell. Reed. Yes.
Daphne Maxwell. Reed.
Yes. So let's move on from that. That's my.
Oh, but speaking of 30th anniversaries. I also need to acknowledge the 30th anniversary of Mama Said Knock You Out, which is one of the most seminal hip hop albums of Naima's life.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
It's a five mic album.
Like, and I was marveling over the fact that, you know, it was LL's fourth studio album, and it was like the whole, you know,
LL's comeback.
It was only his fourth, but he was only 22. And it's the fact that people have been doing the whole, like, he fell off after Walking with because he was on his sexy shit. But it just, that album, Marley is a motherfucking genius, I swear to God. That album is so good.
And I mean, and LL did what I think a lot of people, nowadays don't do, because it's just a different time and different technology. But Marlon had a house, may still have it, up in Spring Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a studio up there.
And then just used to be in there.
Yeah, LL just went up there and stayed.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'm just going to go. These niggas are sleeping on the floor. Like,
yeah, because the album wasn't even on schedule. That he wasn't supposed to do the album. They just started working. Yeah, him and Marley just started working on some Squash the Juice Crew beef shit. And
they had done, what was the Jingling?
They did Jingling first.
Yeah.
And they just kept going. And it's like, in an alternate universe somewhere, Kane did the Mama Said Knock You Out album.
He should have.
You know what I mean? Or some version of it. And that would have been his thing. I know, Sean, I know you got something to say about this album, because that's your man's.
I've always said, y'all niggas gonna put some respect on Todd's name. And y'all don't stop acting like, you know, I get it.
Like, we called him the GOAT for a reason. Yeah, like, that nigga was... Ooh.
Yeah, nigga. Yeah. He been doing this, okay? He been a star since the nigga said Box and Crush Groove. Y'all gonna stop acting like he was.
Literally.
Yeah, nah.
Since his 17-year-old ass sat there and said Box.
Box. That was it, nigga. A star was born, and y'all gonna act like it.
Yeah.
No, it's and I think
didn't realize it was 30 years. I didn't realize
it was 30 years. Ago. And, you know, I believe that album and the energy from that album. And also, LL was younger than his peers, but that's what allowed LL. I did a sermon on it like 2 years ago on him, and I retweeted it the other day, but I was reading through it because I'd forgotten some of the shit I said. And I noted that, like, by the time he did the Mr. Smith album, which was the one with Hey Lover and stuff like so Mr. Smith was like my sophomore year in college, and there had never been a time since, like, I was in middle school that LL didn't have active albums out. That was an unheard of stretch of, like, nobody who was active when I was in middle school was still relevant when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe PE, like, ish. But, like, really, it was just, like, Tribe, kind of, but Tribe was more like when I was in high school.
Yeah.
So, like, LL was, like, it from the golden era who was still, like, putting up real...
And I want to say, one thing. I think we often don't really appreciate him because when we look at photos of even when he was younger, he does not look like a child.
Yeah,
right.
He's a child.
He was 16, 17 years old.
He was 16 to 17 years old. Now, yes, he might have been 6'3" and fucking 200 pounds, but he was a kid.
He was a kid.
And he was living in his grandmother's basement still.
Nigga, I think he was living there like after the first album.
I think he was living there until he got married and some shit. Nigga, like, I think he was driving like,
in the driveway. Benz was in the driveway. Nigga.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. He was in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, the nigga's a legend. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, he doesn't get the respect, which is weird. Like, even like, when Versus kind of first started, his name kind of came a couple of times, and people kind of were like, I don't know, not really understanding. What are you talking about?
It's familiarity breeding contempt. Anytime you have somebody who is still hyper-visible and around, it's the same way people act about Usher. It's the same way people act about LL. It's almost like the longevity of their career and their visibility actually...
It hurts them.
Mm-hmm. People don't realize, A, how long they've been doing this, B, like, the really strong parts of their career, And they're just associating them with like the latest shit, the corny shit. Like I think about how people were trying to play Dionne Warwick at one point, talking about the Psychic Friends Network and shit.
Niggas was trying to play Dionne Warwick on Sunday.
Like she wasn't the first fucking black pop star.
Niggas were trying to play Dionne Warwick on Sunday.
Yeah,
like
on Sunday they were like, "Oh, why she come? Are you crazy?
We should probably transition into that.
No. Yeah. We're gonna save the verses for later. We're gonna hold that till later because we need a little bit of time.
To dig into that. I just need niggas to take some time to go to Google. Because, like, I remember this little white boy did a story on LL. I think we talked about this. This little white, or at least in the group chat, this little white boy did a story on LL about something about LL being overhyped, being small. And I was like, get the fuck out of here with this bullshit 32-year-old white boy.
Clown shit. So,
Def Jam was built on LL Cool J's back.
Yeah, okay, that's it.
Now I'm done.
Inka, you got any shout-outs? Because we know you always got them.
I always got shout-outs. Shout-out to... What was I going to say? Oh, I had a hell of a day because I've been cooking a lot during quarantine.
Okay.
And I forget to, like, open... So I have an electric stove, and there's, like, the little space under the burners.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my, like, drip tray was starting to disintegrate. And I turned the oven on, all of those like particles were in the air and choking and like.
Oh.
But shout out to Ivy who opened the door.
Look at Ivy! Ivy with the emergency preparedness.
There's some air up in here.
I bet Ivy know how to stop, drop, and roll. So I know she know how to stop, drop, and roll too. Good for Ivy.
God bless her. Thank you, Ivy.
Clean under your drip trays and the whole thing because
I actually need to do that
in it, and I've been cooking like twice a day for
so it's a lot up into there,
so
I need to do that and I
so
need
yeah
to
that's
also,
what I've been doing all day.
I need to clean my oven too. The last time I haven't used my oven through most of shutdown because the last time I used it something was happening in there and I didn't feel like going in the seat, like something was smoky, something was smell like some something
this is some black shit. I don't know what's going on, but I'll get to it tomorrow.
I was like, I just ain't gonna use the oven. I
sprayed the easy off in there.
That's exactly what's about to happen, I'm gonna spray the easy off. And let it marinate. You gotta let everything soak. Like you have to let the cleaning supply.
You gotta let it sit.
So the Comet has to season the tub. You know what I mean? Like you gotta let the easy off has to sit so it can work and break.
All right, Gladys.
Don't hate on the domestication.
Have you been watching basketball or not really?
I'm in and out.
Did you watch last night? Oh, you muted.
Sorry about that. I watched the last quarter, basically. I mean, I didn't see the block. I wasn't watching that game. I watched the Lakers. The Clippers. And Denver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of all over the place early on.
Yeah, just wanted to say the Clippers are eliminated. Everybody had the Lakers and Clippers as the big showdown in the finals, and the Clippers got whopped by Denver. They were up 3-1 and lost 4 straight. So they shit is a mess right now. Who knows what's going to happen for them next season? But it's been interesting to watch it. Obviously, in the bubble, with no real. They've actually been letting a few fans in.
No, those aren't fans.
It's friends and family of the team. And Rajon Rondo's brother and Russell Westbrook got into it the other day. They was about to scrap it out when the Lakers eliminated the Rockets in 5. So it's been just very interesting to watch it this year because, again, it's just been a different energy. And just real quick on another sports thing, the NFL started Thursday, actually. And then a lot of games on Sunday. And that was interesting to watch, too, because, again, no fans in the stadium. Or, and outdoor stadiums have, like, a few. The Saints, y'all played, y'all had none, right?
Yeah, they well, you saw the mayor. She said we in phase two.
She was like, phase two. What do you not, what's not clear?
When you see a black woman do this shit here with her hands,
and then cock her head, like, what you said?
When she did this,
my nigga, that like, is not about to go the way you think it's going.
Yeah, just be quiet. Just be quiet, my nigga, because
that head cock.
That was like, not today. Word. You got McDonald's money?
And then she just walked away.
Like, I'm done.
Nigga, you heard what the fuck I said.
Yes, there ain't gonna be no back and forth.
Let this other lady speak to me. I'm
Meanwhile, college football is out here.
Wide open.
Like, fuck it.
But I saw them FSU videos, like, oh, yeah.
I don't get it.
But what's happening at college, not just college football, but the colleges in general, is like, of course, there's like mad outbreaks of COVID because all these kids, they're showing all these pictures of kids, they're having parties, there's nobody wearing a mask. They're acting like it's just regular. And so there's all these outbreaks. So we're going to have to keep watching because I think by the time mid-late October comes, man, some of these colleges might start shutting down again because nobody's
And there's an article that just came out. I haven't read it yet, but that basically says that, is it the Times or Post or something? I have to go back there. I haven't read it yet, but the header was basically like, not that we should not expect to go back to life as normal in 2021. And I was looking at the comments under the post, and a lot of people were like, you know, the precautions aren't sustainable. People are just going to go back to their normal lives. And I'm like, y'all still don't understand. It's not that you physically cannot go do whatever the fuck you want to do. Like, y'all can go ahead and do whatever you want to do. Have your little parties, have your people get together, do all that shit. But what is going to happen is that numbers are going to rise again and we're going to end up back under complete shutdown. And yep. I just don't understand what part of that is not
because
you're
asking for people who operate in an individualistic society, who operate, we do not live in a communal way.
Right.
We don't take others into consideration. We're a nation built on my rights, my things, my. And so we're asking people to basically take out what they've been raised to do.
Yeah. Right,
like it's the nobility of being a loner. It's the nobility.
But there also seems to be like this thought that you can avoid a contagion rate by sheer willpower. Like it doesn't fucking work like that.
Like, I'll be good. God's on my side. This type of thing.
Yeah, and then niggas be acting all surprised. They're gonna be surprised when once again we can't go nowhere.
But here's what's really gonna happen because yeah, your death rate might slow down, okay. But your niggas are gonna be 27 and you can't do anything because your fucking respiratory system is shot to shit.
It's tore up. It's tore up.
Okay, and you're not gonna be able to raise your kids. Okay,
mm-hmm. Right.
And
you're gonna be walking with
erectile dysfunction as one of the lasting effects.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes.
Happening.
Well, that's the other thing
it's gonna be a bunch of 28-year-old niggas walking around with the oxygen tanks.
But the thing is, like, the effects are still showing up. You stupid. The effects are still showing up differently in everybody. That's the thing. Like, it's not even a consistent.
Yo, the shit's only like 8 months old. We've only been looking at this for like 8 months. Like, we don't know what might happen. We have no idea.
And I'm scared for us as especially as black folks. And I've brought this up on the show before. I'm really scared for us because these holidays is coming, and we know how we all are with the holidays, and we love to get together. We don't even love to get together. Like we need to get together. It's part of our DNA for us to all gather, eat, have fun, play cards.
Let me tell y'all.
And I'm scared. Go ahead, bro.
The young ones are gonna want to do that shit. And the really, really old ones are going to want to do that shit.
Yeah.
But you know who's going to be regulating that? That 45 to 60-year-old group?
Us.
You niggas are not coming over
LBS.
Here. Yeah. Mm. Mm-mm. We're not doing this, bro.
Can do that shit on Zoom.
Y'all going to do a drive-by. Yeah, I'll put your plate to the side.
Drive me off a sweet potato pie and keep
going. Yeah. a whole pie. You get a whole pie, you get a whole pan of mac and cheese. All that. All that. Not coming in here, bro.
Yeah,
not
finna do this. I hope not, because I'm scared to be looking at Instagram on Thanksgiving and seeing everybody playing, you know, games and all this type of shit. And then,
yeah, get ready, because you're going to see.
Then you're going to see the RIPs by Christmas.
Exactly. Yeah. I need the GoFundMe is going to be going up because Aunt Irma ain't had no insurance, and now she's, you know,
right.
She, you know, so.
Yo, the GoFundMes are out of.
Yo, I've been getting hit.
I get it, but like my DMs.
Yo, that's my thing. So I've been getting DMs. I've been getting DMs from people I don't even know. Like, I'm getting DMs from people I don't know. They don't follow me. And it's like, I'm trying to raise money for such and such. So I ask questions. I'll read the GoFundMe and I'll ask some questions. But then usually it's like, my thing is, I can't amplify you who I don't know at all. Unless I'm about to amplify all these niggas I don't know at all. You know what I mean? Like, it's a slippery slope.
I don't get nobody no money.
I might throw you something. Well, most of the times,
I ain't throwing nobody shit. Good
most of the times, they want me to retweet or repost because, you know, because of my following. But I'm just like, I can't. Shit, there's niggas I know can't pay rent right now. You know what I mean? So how am I retweeting your shit,
boosting your shit,
and I don't know you at all?
Yeah, I'm shit out of.
Like, this one girl hit me because she was trying to get money to extend her student visa. And I was like, you're housed right now. You're in school right now.
You good.
You're trying to extend your visa in like 3 months? Nah, shorty, good luck with that, though.
So, God bless. Let's jump into some TV real quick. Put Nye and Bro on. They can go do whatever they got to do. We're just going to talk about
the only show that y'all watch that I don't at this point. And by y'all, I mean Jeffrey. Like, we had this conversation last week, Inka, about how, like, the pop, like, TV discussions are really Jeffrey TV discussions. Right. Me and Sean watch mad shit, Jeff don't watch. Okay, but go ahead, Jeff.
All right, cool. We're going to talk about Lovecraft together as a family unit. Right. But let's talk real quick about Love and Marriage Huntsville, because it was the mid-season, whatever thing, finale.
Does weird season.
It's a weird thing. Shit. Yeah, like I was still like season one episode. I don't know, whatever. So this was some sort of finale, and overall, it was a very dark season to me. Like it wasn't.
It really was.
Right.
I was waiting for a happy episode, and it never came.
Wasn't only happiness was Maurice graduating.
Oh, taking the bar.
Yeah, exactly. That was like a very nice moment. Maurice and Kimmy had, I guess, as a couple, they had the lightest moments. There were some things, but overall, they had the lightest moments.
I think they're pretty solid.
Yes, they seem to have a very solid relationship. Yeah, there are things, but that's relationships. It's always things. But overall,
they have like blended family issues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but they definitely both seem to love each other. They both seem to be totally committed to each other. There's no, you know, doesn't feel like there's any type of
respect.
Yeah, mutual respect. No cheating. No funny shit. Yeah. No money issues. Nothing. So they're good. But it was a very dark season, and you know, and it was very, very interesting because production. We walked into the season thinking that most of the darkness is going to come from Mel and Martell. Because of how the last season ended, you know, so then this season they kind of, at the beginning, they're back together and it's all like we're team Holt again and all that. But there was definitely.
And then what we know now with their divorce pending.
Divorce, exactly. And there definitely was chinks in the armor as the season went on. Like Mel, I think, found it hard to keep up that facade. Of like we're good, I love like she did it publicly. Whenever they had scenes of them two together, like she would be like going at him all the time, like because she, I don't know, rightly so, she was mad and hurt and embarrassed that he's cheating with this woman.
Right, I think us watching her go at it with him was more just like he didn't want to deal with it at all.
No,
he's like this is in the past, but you can't be like that if you're on a reality show and. There's a lag in time when the audience gets to see and react. Mm-hmm. And Mel is watching all of this in real time. So I think we're kind of watching her watch us and see shit is not over. People are still out here thinking I'm a fool for dealing with you and you don't want to talk about it at all.
Yeah. I agree with that. And then the only time he kept it funky was when he would go to the therapy sessions.
Well, right, but even that, I feel like the therapist was keeping it super late.
You don't think the therapist is going as hard as he could have?
That's the black man?
No.
Yeah, the black man. I forget his name.
Look at
Broad he's face.
Keeping it late.
I've seen, you know, I've been in and out on this, and bruh definitely, he's taking his foot off the gas on pressing him.
Do you think it's because he's on TV, or
I think it's a little bit of both. I'm not saying that therapist is not doing his job, because maybe he's doing this as a part for the cameras, like understanding. You know, I'm almost positive like they're probably facilitating this to mm-hmm. some level of production, mm-hmm. and so he's giving like, this is what we'll do on camera. This is what we'll keep to ourselves. It would be I would have to think that. He couldn't just have a full-on therapy session on camera. That's just
it's too much to come out.
It's private.
Yeah, you know I don't.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying.
There's no way that he's having a therapy session with him and the accountability never being mentioned.
Yeah,
because that's what we're all doing here.
It's
trying to hold you accountable for what you caused in this marriage. It's not about anything else, and the fact we don't ever hear that is like,
he's just kind of like, he basically blames her. He's like, well, she had to done this, that, and the third, I would have cheated. That's kind of his attitude. Like, you had to been cooking,
right? He feels entitled to just have a little piece.
He's like, yo, like, you wasn't giving me sex the way I wanted. I don't know what that, he never kind of goes into detail, but it feels like there's some acts that he likes being done that she doesn't do or does very, in his mind, not enough. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, well, if you would have did that and then I wouldn't have went outside. It's goofy, but I'm just saying what his stance is. That's his stance.
What happens when you marry the person you're quote unquote supposed to marry versus
the person you want to marry.
Want to actually have sex with.
We could dig in on that for a second. I think there's a lot of that to it. Like they both went to Alabama A&M. He's a Kappa. She's an AKA. They were both probably pretty popular on campus. You know, they're both good-looking people, so they make a good-looking couple. So it's like, they're like, perfect couple. But like you said, like, he keeps going back to the, I hate to call her a side piece, but I guess is what she is, but he keeps going back to the other woman to the point now, I think, like, he's with her. And she allegedly is pregnant with his child. So there's something about that woman that he really connects with. But I think like from the image standpoint, that's probably not who he would have picked.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mel has the image that looks good. But there's something about that other woman that keeps pulling him back over there. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, maybe he'll end up being happy now that he's with this other. I don't know, but it's very, very interesting just how it spun through the course.
I'm not rooting for him. He's an asshole.
He's an asshole.
He's miserable. I hope that she's putting him through a bunch of shit so that he can see his kids in another state. I hope it's hard.
I read that he's moved to Atlanta now as well.
Asshole.
He's moved to Atlanta too.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he moved to Atlanta too. Yeah, he left Alabama. I guess it's probably because of the kids. It ain't that far from Huntsville to Atlanta. It's only like a couple hour drive. But my point was to all this, like, the darkness actually ends up becoming Marceau and Tisha. That to me is like that was the heavier, even darker relationship than Mel and Martell, because Marceau was
that
like,
last scene was a doozy.
Brutal. And he didn't give a fuck. Like that, it looked like to me, and bro, like, you're a productor, so you probably get turned on tripping, but it looked like to me, like, for a minute, like, he forgot the cameras was there and just kind of went at her like he would go at her regularly. That's how it felt to me. What'd you
think? The fact that he was just like, I'm not accepting one tear about that from you, was like, whoa.
Damn.
I mean, we kind of talked about that, and they might have the same crew. And so what happens is, it's like,
you get used to people.
You get used to people being around, right? And it's just like, he kind of went off because his guard might have been down a little bit because he didn't have a air quotes, a stranger in his midst.
I got you.
And I, look, I've always thought that that nigga was terrible. Yeah. I thought he'd been trash. He ain't gonna change. You know, that you know, bless her heart, she done gave that nigga all her good years. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And she, you know, listen, she'll be fine. I'm sure she'll figure it out. But that nigga there, he, nothing about him is changing. Nothing.
Like the nigga actually said to her that she's being selfish because she wanted to go back to work and go back to school.
My
like,
nigga, he didn't want to cook his kids pancakes. That nigga's an awful human. I would never allow a nigga like that in my presence. Yeah. Like niggas like that, I leave. If that nigga's at the function, like, cause if that's your man, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? I'm old, nigga. I don't need any friends. And I definitely don't need niggas like that around me.
Yeah.
I'm not co-signing that. I don't want them niggas around my kids. I don't want them niggas like that around my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good, my nigga.
Yeah.
He's the kind of abusive that, like, if Tisha's my girlfriend, we not hanging out anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love you, but we can't. There's something about him that I don't feel safe.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the hell he might do to you, but, like, me... I can't be around that. Yeah. That's wild to me.
Yeah, he's awful, and God bless her because she's like you said, Sean said she's wasted a good year.
And I'm saying that relatively speaking.
No.
I don't want it to seem like she had kids now and she dried up.
No, she can't
go get a man or you know what I'm saying.
But what you said is right in that. I don't know if you remember. She revealed that in that scene that she. When she graduated college, she had an internship in to go to California. Like, she was about to go on to really do some real career shit. And she decided to stay in Huntsville with this dude and, like, let all of that go.
But I just want to say, and I'm not asking for any retorts, and I just want to lay it out there. Like, when people talk about reality, they only mention one kind of show.
Yeah.
Okay, and they don't talk about these other kind of shows because they got degrees on the wall and they got really nice suits.
But they still doing dumb shit.
And it's still so I'ma just let that be.
Yeah, all right.
Y'all know I don't watch Love and Marriage Huntsville, but there is an alternative timeline in which I would have been homegirl because my boyfriend from high school and college wanted me not only to not come back to New York, but once I was here, he was really trying to get me to come back to South Carolina. And I can imagine, like, and I was like, can I just be here for a couple of years? Like, can I just be back here for a couple of years? Come here, do some, you know, this nigga did not want to leave. And he's never left South Carolina.
He's
like, to travel... His ass is still fucking there. Yeah. And like, I mean, he traveled stuff like that, but he has never moved away. He was always like, well, I need to move for it. We got the BMW plant and we got the this and we got the that. And I was like, I can't.
That's for you. Yeah. So, you know, in October, I think 30 something, we got the commercial for my favorite, Fix My Life is coming back.
But, like, wait, what kind of episodes, though?
Because last season,
I want to say Ayala had, like, maybe three original episodes.
Was that last season when she had the boy yelling into the ground?
That was, like, 2 years ago at this point. And then she did a whole Where Are They Now? And
she put that grown-ass man in her bosom.
Word.
Tapping and patting his back like a baby needing a burp. I said, nigga, if you don't get your ass off that ground, fucking up them jeans. What is wrong with you?
Okay, you're too religious.
Pull it together, nigga.
So we're going to see. Let's jump into Lovecraft real quick. Episode 5. I say it every week, but again, to me, a phenomenal episode. Like always, kind of a standalone episode, but still ties into moving the story forward. This episode was basically, I mean, for, you know,
I think it was called Metamorphosis of a Black.
Yeah, it was about how a Black person would feel to be white.
And Ruby especially, because Ruby is...
big girl, dark skin.
Well, not just that, but like she is acutely aware and bitter about the limitations that she believes that she's facing because she's Black. So, like, the reason she doesn't like Letitia, aside from Letitia being small and light-skinned as opposed to her being larger and black, is because Letitia would just, like, left home and went out in the world and just chased dreams, mm-hmm. fantasy, whatever. And she felt duty-bound to stay in Chicago with her mom. So, like, yeah. she felt like she couldn't have her own dreams. But also, I don't know if you remember, but like the first couple of episodes, her dream was to work at Marshall Fields.
Yeah, Marshall Fields. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Marshall Fields had no black women, no color girls working there. And her resume was impeccable. She's taking all these typing classes in the secretarial mm-hmm. school and the accounting school. All of this just to be like a shop clerk, right? And then she walks in there one day, last episode before this episode, and there's a black girl on the floor. And the girl's just like, oh, I just started the day. I applied on a whim. And she even blames that shit on Letitia. Like, I'm fucking around with Letitia. I lost focus.
Yeah.
So when she's given this potion that allows her to morph into whatever she wants to be, and she gets to walk through life as a white woman and really sees, like, how ridiculous they are. It's just interesting. It was an interesting concept because she's also just a person who she's very uncomfortable in her own skin, in her own situation, beyond just the oppressiveness of being black. Like, she's really mad at the unfairness of being black because she knows that she's smart and she's, you know, resourceful and she's witty and she's cultured and, you know, all of that type of stuff. So it was really interesting to watch. And then it was interesting to watch her learn how to weaponize it, right?
Yeah.
Like, at first she loves the novelty of it. Then she's like, these white people ain't shit. And then she decides to weapon, and they're crazy, and they got all kind of crazy shit going on, and then she decides to weaponize it, and that's when it gets interesting.
But then even more interesting, like, to the weaponizing part, because like you said, then she starts to weaponize it, and then there's a portion where she kind of, she turns on the other black girl. Like,
well, because she's mad, because it's kind of like, how dare you not realize?
Exactly.
She's like, well, but she's also mad at the black girl because she's like, you don't even realize how special this opportunity is, you got to be twice as hard. Twice as good
to get half as far.
And I think, and she was mad that homegirl didn't even recognize it, and that homegirl was even putting herself in a position for the white girls to criticize her.
And she was also mad that she found out that the black girl didn't have an education.
Right, right.
She's like, well, how the hell did you even get in here? Like, I got all these credits and you got nothing and you got the gig before me. And we come find out later that was because the old boy was trying to fuck.
Mad at the wrong person.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Not even just, Marshall Fields sent out like a memo to all
a corporate
them.
Memo.
Like, okay, integrating now. So,
basically the next black woman who walked in the door.
Yeah, that was
it. Right. He got the job. I don't think it was personal to Tamara or.
But yeah. Also,
it was
like,
just like, okay, you got to integrate this shit.
I think it was also the realization that, like, if she were white, she'd be qualified to be a manager. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to just trying to get in as a shop clerk.
That is real, but it's also coupled with, and I thought the part where the guy gave her the free ice cream reminded me of that old Eddie Murphy skit on Saturday Night Live, but he was white and the
guy.
Oh,
when he was white, people just getting free shit.
Silly. What are you doing? Paying. It was kind of similar.
Yeah, yeah.
That she was overqualified, but also in that white world, like, they just get shit.
Yeah.
With no qualification, they just get shit.
Just
because. She's like, just because. She's basically, I was just a white lady. I walked in the ice cream. Like, remember the guy asked her, why'd you take the money? She's like, I didn't need it. All I needed was to be white.
Right,
and I was Gucci.
I was
Gucci to go anywhere I wanted to go, do anything I wanted to do with no qualms, and I could get shit free. If I was fucked up, I probably could have got a free meal. Like, whatever. So it was just a really, but, you know, at the end, we found out that she didn't want to be white no more. Like, she actually didn't like it. It was just a really interesting concept to the episode. You know,
definitely. And I'm curious to see. I'm curious to see if this changes Ruby's dynamic with her
sister, with Letty,
right? But the other thing is that at the end, Ruby realizes that she's been gamed her damn self. And now I need to go back and watch the second episode because I'm trying to figure out if Is his name Michael William? Whatever his name is.
I forget his name, yeah.
If like he's that. Been her, if he was always her, or if they were actually two different people.
See, I read one of my...
I don't think we've ever seen them in a scene.
So they're in the same room. That's what I was thinking.
I watched one of my YouTube, I told you, I watched the breakdown things, and the guy, he didn't know, this is assumption, but he assumed that, because remember, he said that character was killed.
I don't remember him being killed. I remember he wasn't around. Yeah.
They didn't show, but apparently that he was killed, and then the guy assumed is that the woman took his when he was killed, she took over his thing with the potion and made him. But I guess that might be what about Montrose?
So first of all, Michael K. Williams.
No. Like,
this is why I fuck with Michael K. Williams so hard. So there's a profile on him in Esquire, and he posted a couple of the pictures from the shoot, and he was saying like, no matter what I do as an actor, like I'm telling hood stories, and I'm telling stories about where I come from. Like, these are still Black stories, and you know, his fearlessness in playing. Like these really complicated guys who were, because as much range as he has, even from The Wire to Boardwalk Empire to now, there's still like a through line in these characters, right?
Even the Central Park Five.
Even in Central Park Five, so But there's a commonality in who Michael K. Williams plays, and it's always like a very kind of like gruff exterior. You really don't think there's much to him on the surface. And then there's like all these layers. Behind. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just applaud the shit out of him for just how he throws himself into these joints. And I mean, we kind of got a hint that it was coming. Like, old boy said something last episode.
Yeah, he did.
He'd been hanging out with Sam or whatever, but still to watch it play out.
And then to watch him accept it at the end.
Him become the butterfly. In this episode is so great because he doesn't speak, I think, for like the second half of the episode. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say anything
after. I don't even think he says anything when they come. I don't think he even says anything fight? When they come into the. I don't even think he says anything before anybody. Does he say she gone? I don't even think he says that.
Mm-mm.
I don't think he says. I gotta go back and look. I don't know if he says anything, but he definitely doesn't say anything for the rest of the episode.
But the fact that we're able to like get all of that from his performance, and like he hasn't said a single word, but we were like all that
so crazy,
all of that like what do you call that? Like, he's just so used to being closeted.
Yeah,
he's used to shutting off everything. Everybody that like he has this opportunity to be a butterfly,
right? And he takes it
still. And about taking it even in a safe space, like it was. Right.
Do we think that this solidifies that George is Tick's dad?
Not necessarily. It don't mean he wasn't fucking his wife. You know what I mean? I think that's a deeper story. That's a deeper story we got to get. I think that's going to reveal itself in time. I do want to point out, though, for the sake of fairness, there's been two pieces of backlash of different levels against the show. One was I saw a few people calling out that it was distasteful. They used Frank's Ocean's Bad Religion for the sex scene. And not because it was a same-sex sex scene, but just that the point at which the lyric is Allah Akbar, which is the actual words of prayer happening like at the moment of penetration, whether it was like, you know, same sex sex or heterosex or whatever it was, that was disrespectful. And last week when Montrose killed old girl, the indigenous community was upset because they said that first she wasn't an accurate representation of what they call a dual spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that second, like, to still show, like, the slaughter of an indigenous person for entertainment value was irresponsible. So I don't have a firm stance on either of those things. I'm just putting it out there for fairness of, you know, viewpoint, representation, et cetera. Because I'll be honest, I'm looking at this shit just for the black shit, which, because we don't always get to do that. But I want to be cognizant of, like, the other conversations that are happening at the same time.
But, I mean, again, just a phenomenal episode. Like, and it looks like next week is going to be even crazier because we get a lot more background on the girl from Korea. And what her real tie to Tick is. It was crazy.
And shout out to Jonathan.
The guy who plays Tick.
Jonathan Reynolds.
Is it Reynolds or Majors?
No, it's not. Was it Jonathan what?
I think it's Majors.
Jonathan Majors.
He's joining the Marvel family. I think I might have said this here before, but I saw him the first time last year in this small movie, Last Man from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy him. He's dope. As a character actor. He like the acting across the board in this shit is from the main cast is really good. And we also don't forget, we don't know where the aunt and the daughter are. They still out there somewhere.
They haven't made it home yet.
That storyline's gonna come back around.
I wanted to say a quick shout to Naomi Osaka, who won the U.S. Mm-hmm. Open in the blackest fashion possible.
Yes.
Wore a different mask every day with the names of people who have been murdered by the police. Wore like a traditional, was it a traditional African garb or when she took her pictures with her trophy?
Like, she just put on a head wrap.
No, but even the dress had like a pattern that was.
It did.
The dress had like
a pattern, but I don't think it was a traditional pattern. It looked like a sundress. Hold on.
Yeah, look it up because I believe the dress meant something. But anyway, like, she's there with her boyfriend Corday.
The dress is just cute. She said I had to bring out the head wrap for this one. It was just a head wrap.
She was popping. She talked about, you know, her ancestors. I just love the way this girl, because she's still a girl, she's like 21 or 22 years old, the way she carries herself, like one of the and it's very interesting because when she first, you know, kind of gained real prominence, she's half Japanese and half Haitian.
Yeah.
So when she gained prominence, which is when she beat Serena, I guess it was her first kind of really big coming out. I mean, she had lost to Serena once, and then this year after she beat her. But anyway, she became a prominent figure in tennis. And it was interesting because the media was trying, in my opinion, was trying
to create a rivalry.
And try to spin like she's an Asian girl.
Right.
Like she's like this meek Asian girl. And stuff, and they were trying to big her up like as just this Japanese girl, and she would always be like, "Yo, like I'm half Haitian too, like you know what I'm saying? Like what up, like ça passe, like what's good." And so this, this metamorphosis, just like we were talking about in Lovecraft, how she's become like this person who's making sure a message comes across, and she got messages from the moms, some of the moms,
Sabrina Fulton and from, I think, Ahmaud Arbery's mom.
Yes. No, Ahmaud Arbery's dad. It's Ahmaud Arbery's dad. Yeah. But you know, so anyway, she's become, so it's kind of, I think the media's kind of thrown because it's like, oh, she's doing like black shit. You know what I'm saying? And again, she loves her mom. It's like she doesn't count her Asian side, but I think they.
But she realizes this is an important moment. Exactly. Like she's not even being ambiguous about it. Like,
no.
I think even the press, like she's been very clear that she's making a statement on purpose while she's doing it. And I want to say, like, a reporter asked her something like, what message are you trying to send with your face mask? Because she was like, well, what message are you receiving?
Exactly. Because I'm going to put it out there.
Like, tell me what you processing.
Yeah, and for a 22-year-old right for a 22-year-old girl to be that sharp to flip
she's
it back.
Super
like that.
She's super savvy.
Yeah, she's savvy. So I love her. So that's one of the.
And I loved seeing Cordae cheering for his girl. Like that was so sweet. That was dope. Really sweet and cute.
Yeah, that was dope. And he was wearing shirts too.
Mm-hmm.
He was wearing shirts and messages as well. Like
that's why I'm wearing like the Fund the Police and.
Yeah, and he had the shirt that the Andre here. Andre 3000 had like in the other country, all countries, like darker people are.
Mm-hmm.
He had that one on. Then just a quick gossip shout. Cardi B is filed for divorce from Offset. I don't know the reasons why. I mean, to the public, it was sudden. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. But
I mean, was it sudden?
I mean, yeah, I didn't know nobody knew they were getting divorced.
We didn't know it was going to happen right now, but we also weren't surprised.
I kind of was. I kind of was.
Here's what's happening. I'm talking complete shit. But when you got a nigga who's used to being able to move like he wants to and do whatever he wants to, and all of a sudden he can't, shit gets uncomfortable. So my guess would be either he was showing his ass or they were arguing over stupid shit, or he did some dumb shit and got caught because we're still in the middle of a pandemic and you can't just be out there moving any kind of way.
Yeah, if I had to pick, I'd pick the latter, that he did some dumb shit and got caught. And probably something that was going to be extremely embarrassing to her and, you know, whatever. So, I mean, God bless them and their kid, their child, and I hope it, you know, somehow it could work out for the best. For
I mean, but here's where niggas are annoying. So, like, motherfuckers like to say Cardi wasn't wifey material, but then she got married. Then they were like, but you married to a nigga who cheats and you stayed with him and, you know, that means that you don't value yourself. But now she's filing for divorce and they're like, oh, I guess because there's the WAP line, like, I don't cook and clean. Let me tell you how I got this ring. And they're like, oh, I guess you should have cooked and cleaned. And, but, like, she divorced him. He's one.
Yeah.
While now, also, like, I hate to say it, but more relationships have a partner, have one of the partners cheat at some point than don't.
Yeah.
That's not unique to Cardi.
Including all the people talking shit about them.
Right. That's not unique to being with a rapper. That's not unique. And if it was somebody else, if it was a whole different kind of couple, you'd be like, bless her heart for staying and sticking in marriage.
Keeping it out.
Whatever.
Niggas, we've been through a lot of things. Adventure.
As we always say, exactly. As we that always word. Say, just say that you
word.
See absolutely no value in women and just keep it moving. Just say it. Just
you
say
hate
it.
Us and move on.
Just say it. Just say it.
All right.
I think it's good to get that starter marriage out of the way so you can get to the promise.
To the real shit.
Agreement.
To the real shit.
To the real shit.
Gotta mention Andrew Gilliam, who came out on Tamron Hall's show as a bisexual man.
Well, let's reframe this conversation. He and his wife had a sit down with Tamron Hall to discuss everything that happened.
Yes.
And in that sit down, a private sit down. They weren't in the studio audience.
Yeah, it was a private sit down.
To discuss everything that happened in his rehab and everything. And in that sit down, he shared that he identifies as a bisexual man.
Yeah. And it seems like it's very interesting when people do this because, you know, you'll have, you know, again, it's all social media, so it's all bullshit. But, like, you'll have these kind of runs in social media where people will be like, you know, rights for all and LGBT, you know, rights for all, and we have to accept each other. And it can't just be, you know, black rights, but it has to be all rights and all that, right? And then you'll have something like this happen where, a fairly, you know, recognizable person comes out as bisexual and it flips. It's like, oh my God, how could she stay with him? And he
has it. I've seen that.
He gay. He ain't bisexual. He's gay. How can he stay with him?
I haven't seen that. I think there is a question of more like her staying with him through that level of public embarrassment, right? Because we've discussed before that rumors about Andrew's preferences
have been around
since college.
Yeah,
right?
It's kind of known.
So I think there is definitely and the people who I know who know them their allegiance is to her first, so they're very much like, if she's good, we'll ride with the family as long as she's good, right? And in whatever way, through whatever they've done, for all intents and purposes, she seems to be on board, at least at this point. But that said, I feel like this is something Andrew probably felt like he needed to do in order to move forward with his career, because he had too much momentum to just let that shit go and just become like a pundit or something. And without getting, without taking control of the narrative, there would always be the potential that somebody would try to like drop a photo or do some other kind of entrapment bullshit or whatever have you. But I will also say though, Jeffrey, that I do think that if you are seeing the...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off now.
Go ahead, Sean.
But are you saying that he was entrapped in the... Because you said other entrapment.
Okay. I believe that the photos that... The photo, that particular incident that hit, like, the net, I do believe that was a setup. Not that he wouldn't... Not that he didn't know the guy, that he wouldn't have engaged, but even just, like, when you saw the photo of him laying out on the bathroom floor... You could see somebody's like foot in the photo. And then if you looked at the scene of the hotel room, it looked like, it literally looked like what Dave Chappelle be like, sprinkle some crack on it. Like the pills were knocked out and spread around over the floor. Like it was the most chaos. Everything was visible. All the paraphernalia was spread out. And like I said, for me, it was the fact that there were pills like spread out across the floor. So it was like, I believe that, you know, he went there of his own volition, but I definitely believe that, like, circumstances were orchestrated to put him in the most compromising position possible, right? But I also wonder why he got that comfortable in front of people that he doesn't know, but that's a whole, with the exception of the one person, that's a whole other story. But I say that to say that, like, if he could wants to continue his political career anyway, then I'm imagining that this is something they had to decide to do together so that it could never be held over his head. And it is going to be interesting to see this play out, because I don't know that we have, you know, we've reached a phase where in some areas of public blackness, we know of bisexual, masculine presenting black men, but not in politics and not married. You know what I mean? Like that's a very, this new territory, and I'm interested. But I was going to say, Jeff, I do think that the people who you might be seeing who are like, how could she stay with him, et cetera, are probably not the same people who have been posting like, you know, LGBTQ Black Lives Matter too, or, you know, all Black Lives Matter. It's probably not the same cross section. That would be my guess.
What you got to say, Bryce? Like, you got something to say.
I was going to say, Jeff, you probably definitely got that shit off of Facebook. That feels very Facebooky. It was.
You know what's happening over there.
We know what's really good over there. But, you know, look, I'm not a PR person, but I would assume that this is probably the best time during the heat of the pandemic, before the political race heats up. This is the best time for you to go out here, say what you got to say, and kind of get it off your chest, right? Mm. Like, you know, realistically, this was really a small blip on the radar.
It was.
In a grand scheme, but they get it out of the way. I guess my only issue, and I didn't watch the interview because I didn't really take any particular interest in, I didn't need him to grovel. Right. I didn't need his apology. He owes me nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, his wife owes me nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a constituent of his. You know, I didn't feel it was necessary. Mm. But I understand why it was necessary.
Why he did it. I got you.
Of course. I totally, totally get it. I mean, for people that are saying, you know, his wife shouldn't have stayed, If I had to bet, I would bet that his wife is very aware of his preferences,
right?
Yeah. And the things that he likes. And I think that, like any other issue, there was a level of embarrassment with it becoming public, mm-hmm. and not being something that they came out with. So the idea that, you know, he was doing whatever he was doing in that room with whomever, I don't think that that was, I think that was inconsequential to her. It could have been a woman. It could have, you know, whatever.
It was the thing itself.
Yes. It was how he looked out of control. It was how he looked like he had just sort of completely let his guard down. And I do want to say, for the people that are staunchly defending him, it is absolutely your right to defend him and, you know, put that shield up for him because you love him or you appreciate him or you, but like, people going to talk, okay? This is a pop culture thing. So yeah. this idea that people who talk about, discuss, and engage in this, like, aren't going to engage in this, it's just not going to happen.
Not realistic.
Like my man, he was ass naked, passed out.
Yeah.
Like, my nigga, I don't know. If there was a photo of fucking LeBron James,
right?
You know what I'm saying, passed out, ass naked somewhere, yeah, we'd be like, yo, nigga, what?
It's good. Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on? And listen, he's a talented politician.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be fine.
I do too.
I think that for me, I think that he should have had that conversation with Tamron alone. I don't think
without his wife there to be a shield.
Why do you say that?
Because he's there as a shield.
That was his shit.
Mm.
See what I'm saying? When you are a man and you have shit that you got to clean up because you did.
Mm.
Your wife should not have to bear any of the burden of your cleanup.
Mm.
It is absolutely incumbent upon you to clean your shit up. Now, if your wife feels it necessary to be there, which she very well may have felt,
mm-hmm,
then that's perfectly fine too. But it felt very good wife-ish. It felt very stand by your man-ish. It felt very... we have to present a united front.
United front, yeah.
And the reality is, your wife wasn't ass naked on the floor.
Up in the Mandarin.
in a regular ass hotel, okay? Yeah. My nigga, like, your wife shouldn't have to answer for your shit. She will have to. This is the same thing we talked about with Martell. Like, my nigga, you don't get to pick and choose when you got to answer for that shit that you did.
Yeah.
You got to answer for it every time.
Yeah, whenever it comes up. Yeah, you got to deal with it.
Whenever it come up, nigga, or not, or leave.
You know face.
Or leave. Like, you got two choices, nigga. Like, you don't get to have this sort of embarrassment and this sort of level of shit and then dictate the terms and how you're going to address it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not saying he did that. I'm just simply saying.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
I would have preferred him to have addressed this on his own and then brought his wife out.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Maybe done one part to sit down alone.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you got anything about Inka? Anything you want to say?
I mean, I just echo what Sean says. And I hate that he felt like he owed it to us to come out about his sexuality or do any of that, because obviously his preferences are what they are. Like, you don't go 0 to 60, never having been with a man,
yeah,
to go into like a random Econo Lodge with meth in the room and you pass out with stranger men. Like, clearly that's something you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he owed us that. And it sucks that
he didn't.
That he had to like do a PSA about
it. But I also don't think the PSA happens if Andrew didn't make the decision that his political career needs to, that he wants to continue to pursue his political career. If he doesn't decide that, if he decides he wants to go into the private sector. Yeah. But I also think that, like...
Well, in fairness, I don't mean to cut you off. I don't necessarily know that even in the private sector that this wouldn't have been required for the level of compensation, the level of title that a man like that is coming in. He's going into a company. He's on the website, baby.
Right, you know
what I'm saying? He's not like gonna be a regular dude. He definitely got his own bathroom. His
apartment. Exactly.
He has his own bathroom.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, we were, some of my friends who know him or his wife and I were talking about this, and one of my friends made a very good point. Like, in a world where Anthony Weiner can have not one but two dick pic scandals. Yeah. Like, you know, and ultimately, like, by proxy, put Trump in office on the low. Really, because that's how we got to the whole Hillary email shit, was because of his wife's shit, which was linked to his shit. But that then Andrew does deserve an opportunity to, like, speak his truth and move forward. So
I mean, this is still the fact that this is a thing is still very clearly a hurdle for the LGBT folks, right? Like, the fact that because I assure you, if this was a 19-year-old girl that took this picture, or an 18-year-old girl that took this picture, this is not a conversation.
Right.
Not doing this tour. He's not doing this conversation with Tamron. Right?
It's just like, oh, he's a
black man. He is in a conservative industry, which is politics, even by liberal standards, it is a conservative industry.
Very.
And he is from a conservative state.
Yep. Very. Yeah. So you gotta deal with it. You gotta deal with it. I wanna mention this Compton cop shooting real quick. So two police, I think they both rookies, one was a rookie, correct?
I know at least one was a rookie.
At least one was a rookie. I don't know if the other one's a rookie, but both very young. I think one was like 24.
The rookie was 24 and his partner was 31.
Yeah, 31. Were sitting in a squad car. They were walked up on by, I think, a man. You know, you can't really kind of tell. I'm going to say a man because of the clothes and the shape, but, you know, who knows? And were shot point blank in the car several times. Both are still alive. But sustained, you know, some serious injuries. And it kind of ripped off something that's been known, I guess, in L.A. for a while, and now it's becoming more nationally known, which is the Compton Police Department has a huge problem because they have a group of cops called the...
No, hold on, Jack.
It's not just the Compton Police Department. It's several police departments.
Okay, go ahead.
Compton does not have a police department.
Sheriff's Department.
Yes. Sheriff.
Yes, they disbanded their police department
the
and
sheriff's
had
department.
The Sheriff's Patrol as a way to cut costs. Very much like what Cam did.
So is that basically like they defunded the police, kind of?
I would be careful to say that. Because
okay.
It was very much in line with what Camden did, which is they take away the municipal police. And then they basically outsource that to the sheriff. So instead of paying $20 million for a police department, they pay $13 million for whatever the additional sheriffs.
I got you.
Savings, but there's still police activity.
Yes. So yeah, my fault. So the sheriff's department. So it's come to find out that there's in this sheriff's department and others, like Nye said, there are white supremacy gangs within these departments. This gang is called the Executioners. They have tattoos that identify themselves as such. They're not really hiding it, and they have parties when they reward each other for kills, and they're basically like just white gangs rolling within sheriffs
within the police department.
Running the streets like shooting people. So
I would be very careful to just simply say white, because there are Hispanics.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes. They say no blacks and no women.
Did not specify Hispanics.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
Or Latinos.
You're absolutely right about that. So, and there was a story
which we know carry a level of white supremacy.
Oh, absolutely.
But they can't.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been known for since the beginning of probably since like the 30s or the 40s that the black gangs and the Mexican gangs in L.A. always kind of like funk, and even if they're not funking, it's a very uneasy tense truce.
Very tense.
But then there's possibility that they're saying that it might have been one of the executioners who shot these cops. It's all kind of like messy stuff going on, and it's really interesting because the mayor of Compton is a black woman, fairly young black woman, who's got to deal with this situation. And, you know, especially now with this becoming like such a national story after the shootings, it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes and, you know, how much we're going to learn and how much control she'll even have to do. But go ahead, bro.
Let me just say this too. So prior to this shooting, there had been a whistleblower.
Yes.
So the whistleblower has basically exposed a level of corruption with this particular gang. And there was a law professor that I believe identified about 17 different gangs within different sheriff's departments.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he blew the whistle. Yeah. Now, there was an investigation that was supposed to take place. There was an LA Times story maybe a couple weeks prior to this shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So the way this timeline looks up, and if you're a fucking screenwriter, it looks like somebody blew the whistle. This shit was getting real. And I feel like they might have done this in a way to exacerbate the tension with police right now.
Mm.
To almost give them a level of cover to go out there and maybe even hit the whistleblower, because I read that those cops were in stable condition. Now let me be very clear. I'm not at all suggesting that they were, you know, nobody's like, hey, shoot me. Like, yeah. I'm not saying they were in on this, like, yeah, at all. But what I'm saying is, at point blank range, they were in stable condition. We know New York City just had this happen maybe 2 years ago. Point blank range in a cop car, you're sitting duck.
Yep.
You know, both those guys died.
Yeah.
Ed Byrne, that's how Ed Byrne was killed, mm-hmm, in 88. So it just seems like, you know, was he trying to kill them? Was this, you know, something to kind of spark this? Again, I'm not 100% sure. This is obviously all alleged, but there's a lot of smoke here. There's a lot of smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that it's going to be very interesting to see how it unfolds. You know, I'm going to keep watching the story. Go ahead, bro.
I was going to say the main thing is no one's talking about the whistleblower.
Nope. No, I didn't know there was a whistleblower until you sent me that story.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
you sent me the story. So the last thing we want to talk about obviously is Auntie Chella versus Patti LaBelle, Gladys
Knight. Is that
what we're calling
it? I was calling it the Auntie Bowl.
Yeah,
feel like it works well for like things with Chella need to have one syllable and then Chella. Okay. Auntie Chella doesn't work.
All right.
I was calling it, you could call it Auntie Fest. I was calling it Auntie Bowl. That's just me.
I'll just call it Versus.
I like that.
So
that works.
I have to say, for the record, I told niggas Gladys Knight had some shit. Niggas was, and I love Patti LaBelle. Don't get it fucked up. I've seen both of these women in concert, and they are both phenomenal. If you have a chance, if you don't write this book,
I'm not coming on the show.
You're terrible.
I'm tired of your stories.
And I saw Patti LaBelle at the Apollo, so you know how that was. Every auntie from 155th Street. History was in that motherfucker that night, right. And Patti threw her shoes, and there was a black man impersonator with Patti. It was crazy.
Wow.
I saw Gladys Knight at Madison Square Garden, and years ago, Kiss FM did a Christmas concert, and she was the headliner. And yo,
wow,
she
said Kiss FM. I know this nigga was in double-breasted.
But also, before we get into it, we have to not make it. This was not Patti.
Yeah, but it wasn't a battle. It wasn't a battle. It was a celebration.
It was a showcase.
But even before I get to the music part, and you know, obviously y'all jump in whenever you feel it. Like that, I just love the. Like I really felt like, and I think most of us did, felt like we was at our aunt's house
on Thanksgiving
and holiday, because that was literally the conversation.
It's exactly
that your aunts have.
It was starting with the whole conversation and the whole opening conversation is about how many grandkids you had. Do you remember when was the last time I saw your daughter? Do you remember my son?
You remember my mom?
Yeah.
I miss your mom.
You know,
the fact
such
that
such,
they didn't even realize it was live and didn't have
at first, right? Oh, they're like, "Oh, we speaking loud." That was something that bothered me the whole way through is that there didn't seem to be anybody cueing them. Like, these are women who want cues, right? So it's like when they started, the reason they were just talking to each other because nobody was like, "And we're live," I don't know who is in the background.
But I'm kind of glad nobody cued them, because that conversation, I think for most of the people who watch the verses, whatever, you know, everything that's going on this year, we all just needed to hear that. We needed
needed some kind of guidance, though, because at one point you had to do like the shout outs.
She was reading the teleprompter.
I'm a happy birthday to Tim Cooper.
Tim Cook.
From Apple.
Tim Cooper, I think that's his name.
I want to see with some collard greens.
And Larry. I give a shout to Larry.
Larry Jackson. Patty was like, "You know, thank you, Swizz, and what's my man's name?" For Timberland. What I meant was more.
I know what you're saying. Production was could have been awful. Better. Because
the camaraderie between them was great, but they were bringing the songs like abruptly.
Yeah, yeah.
Sound be loud.
At one point, Patty had old medley. She's like four in a row. It was like, what's going on?
Yeah,
like,
she seemed surprised by it.
Yeah, Miss Gladys did Midnight Train twice. Like it was definitely
very weird
on that side. But
I do know that they sound checked, so I'm not sure. I don't think Patty knew her edits, and
She didn't know her edits.
I think whoever did her edits is not a Patty fan, because they didn't edit to the right Patty parts.
Well, there's a couple of things.
Even she was.
But there was a couple of things. Miss Patty left a lot of songs on the table.
So many. I was so puzzled by some of her choices.
To your point, I almost felt like these weren't her choices. they were like somebody else's choices, and she was just like, "All right, y'all put the tape together. I'm gonna go over here and make this banana."
Right.
Cake. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think.
I'm sure that's what happened, though.
Yeah, because I'm like, we did like the songs of Beverly Hills Cop, but like, that's not what we really wanted to hear. We wanted to hear they left so much LaBelle on the table.
Well, she may not have wanted to do LaBelle. So Patty isn't really comfortable with Lady Marmalade anymore.
What about the other LaBelle stuff, though?
I mean, with the other LaBelle, she could have done, can she do it without Nona and
we kind of got to. Glass was doing Pips. Glass and the Pips,
the
they
Pips
weren't
are back, the Pips are background singers. LaBelle was three-part harmonies.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's plenty of songs that she didn't.
I do think there's a couple of disco joints. Like, I thought Patty could have done, what's the joint? It's a joy to have your love.
And she didn't do, she didn't do,
and I don't think she did.
What's the LaBelle one?
When you think about love or like, what?
No. What can you do for me?
She can't do that by herself.
But just play it. Like, that's a smash.
That's my
that
shit, too.
Yeah, it's a great record.
And
but Miss Gladys, you can tell, is still gigging regularly. Obviously, she does a lot of stuff in Vegas.
Can we talk about the singing flex of sitting down?
Yeah.
And blowing.
And the only reason Patty wasn't doing more is because Patty would overpower that mic. I think that Patty was trying not to. I think it was two things. I think Patty would have done more if the tracks were moving too fast for her to BPM, so she didn't know her edits, like I said. Well, Patty also don't sing studio versions of songs.
Also, what I noticed is, again, even with Miss Gladys, but definitely more with Patty, it was definitely kind of like the song would come on, and they'd be like, "What song is this?"
Yeah, I don't think they could hear that.
But I also think that they just didn't know what was coming.
Right.
The teleprompter man fucked up a couple of times.
He got fired.
These are two women that operate with an MD, a musical director.
Yes.
And usually have ears in and all that good stuff.
So even outside of your sound check, there is an immediate run through. For those that don't know, there's an immediate run through before you go out on stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a set list, and even your MD is always cued in because they might change. They might extend the song. They mm-hmm. might. There's so many variables with actual singers. This is what the MD does. It's they were out of sync because that is not how they normally operate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They don't, like I said, they don't do show tapes.
Yeah.
They have a show tape made for the instances where they might just have to do it, but that is not a normal occurrence.
Yeah, they have a band sometimes.
They have a
and
band.
They're standard singers. Even if they don't travel with a band, nigga, you get seven, you can find seven niggas in Chicago that know all that shit, and get Earl's gonna take them down into the basement at the church and get them ready.
Do it right.
And 3 hours and they could.
Yeah. And the thing about Patty for singing, because, okay, so somebody had told a group of us that he had been with Patty on Saturday, and he was like, the women are singing live. They're not doing the 90-second edits. They're singing live. So when I saw Patty singing the track, I was confused, but glad was. Like, she was, Miss Gladys was singing live, because she did have some show arrangements, but she also had, even with the studio joint she was doing, she was singing on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, with Patty's songs be like 4 minutes, 53 seconds long.
Yeah.
So when you try to cut that down to a 90-minute edit, like, she wasn't even getting whole verses out for some of the songs, right?
But also what was happening is then it was getting weird, too, to your point, because then Miss Gladys would basically do like a whole song.
Right.
And Gladys, you could tell, was doing 90-second edits.
She but you could tell singing. Patty was also irritated, because at one point,
like,
she
minute,
was like,
a whole record?
I only got, because at one point she was like, I only got the 90 seconds. That's what they said. And then I remember later when she did You Are My Friend, she was like, I wish I could go longer. I wish I could go around and around and around. Yeah. And I felt like that was
she wanted to do that part. Round and around. And she wanted to do that specific part.
That's how I was like, who the fuck is handling her? Yeah. And it also frustrated me because Patty's at home. So I was like, how does Patty not have the right person?
In Philly. Yeah.
To do this for her, right? And it really more upset me for... Because we all know, A, Patty don't remember her lyrics ever, and B, which she's earned the right not to, because she's
I was gonna say that's
done this shit.
She's 76 years old.
Patty's first single was in 1962. Like, she's earned the right to not remember her lyrics, but also, because Patty does not sing a song the same way twice ever.
Yeah.
Ever. So singing on top of track is not going to work for Patty. Gladys can stay within the lines. Patty be
all over the place.
But
all that being said, it was absolutely my favorite verses.
I loved it.
As
soon as they said something about Sock It to Me Cake, I was like, Lord.
I watched two verses in its entirety.
And that's, this was one of them?
This one. And Face and
Teddy.
Teddy. Okay.
Face and Teddy in this one were like bookends for me. Like, it was just like, this is what I want Versus to be. And also, like, the great thing about Gladys and Patty is that at their age, which was more noticeable when Dion came out, that at their age, for the most part, they can sing their songs in original key. That's so rare.
No, Miss Glass kept saying, you know, when you get
I'm a contralto. I can't, but Gladys was still hitting them notes.
Okay, but my favorite part, and me and Brad talked about it via Twitter, and there was so many favorite parts. My favorite part of this thing was when they were sitting there. They were just sitting there, and Miss Gladys said, "What y'all doing over there?"
That's what my mama said. She said, like, oh, that sounded God. Like so many
that whole,
people.
The whole timeline said they was like, oh, shit, well, let me, what? Am I going out with him?
Let me get my shit together. Nothing, ma'am. You need anything? You know, like, but all that grandma stuff just started. Because even times they would kind of sit there and they'd be like, we've been through so much. And they would just take them long pauses.
And then when Gladys would start talking about the babies and the children, and then when Gladys told Monica and Brandy to work it out,
I was like, Miss Gladys, like, what's that mess y'all be doing out there? Y'all need to stop all that. That was just,
we didn't even know what she was talking about, but we was just like, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. It was great. And like y'all said, like it's just amazing. I watched Tim and Swizz afterwards. They went on IG Live a little bit after. And it's just amazing that we're able to give these type of artists their flowers now. Because, you know, God, bless with Aretha, wasn't able to do this. She's not here. And some other people who have passed away who might have done this. Who's to say? But it's lovely that we can give them their flowers now while they're alive. You know, they're closer to the end than the beginning.
Yeah.
But, you know, they felt that energy. They felt that love. They know that we love them. And, you know, they looked amazing. Like, amazing. Incredible. Okay. Incredible.
Yo, Patty's wigs never miss, ever.
And Gladys, wigs, Gladys, right.
And Gladys' sequin suit. Oh, like, my God. Just, Patty somebody, and her somebody mirror.
Somebody said something about this suit, mirror. Which I found very interesting. I don't who said that? They said that, you know, previous to, like, this era, you know, performers, when they perform, that's why they always would wear sequins and stuff, because all you had, there was no pyro and all that. So
right.
You, was
you, needed
like
to, you needed to attract the light. To
exactly.
Do
and so that's why she would wear something, because that's what they did to hit for the lights to hit them in a certain way. When they
right.
The stage. And I love Ms. Glass got still a little bit of dance steps that she did. Not say she didn't do Saved Overtime.
She missed Saved Overtime. She did Love Overboard.
Love Overboard.
Yeah. Love Overboard.
Yeah.
Which is still a damn.
Yeah.
I had my steps ready, man. I was ready to hit my pip steps and all that.
There were a couple of times where I really needed a pip. I really, but you know, she didn't do Heard It Through the Grapevine either, I don't think.
You know what? I don't think she did.
She didn't.
Which was surprising to me. I have a feeling they ran long and cut some shit.
Because, again, they did not cue them in the beginning.
Yeah.
So that was like 20 minutes of them talking.
But even just in between different segments, they would just be fucking talking, right?
Yeah, because they're good old girlfriends, and Patty said they hadn't actually seen each other physically in a minute, so they was like, all right, but we need to catch up. Like,
yeah. We got some things to talk about.
We got,
like, when she was talking about whoever did her song, she was like, you know he's gone. And she was like, no, I ain't.
No, he
passed.
Gone.
She was like, no.
He passed. Musical director.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, yeah, he passed.
Yeah.
But, you know, God bless him. You know, like, those kind of
here, like, Luther, with no, Lord, we lost Luther this year. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. You got to have them kind of, at 75 and 76, you have to have those conversations. Exactly. Right? It's how's your grandbaby? I miss your mama. What'd you cook? This person died since the last time we talked. Like, it's those things, yeah. Right? I pointed out also about Gladys and Patty in a conversation about it is that part of what we are missing, Quincy said something about this when he was in that interview where he was ranting and everybody was busy talking about what he said about everything else. But one of the things he said about what he thinks is missing from musicians, but I think it also applies to artists today, is that there is a lack of fundamentals, a lack of that training, that really basic training. And part of it is music coming out of schools. Part of it is younger Black people having left the church over the last decade. But also just like, and as the music industry was more crippled financially, like not putting people on the road in the same way. But like Patty and Gladys are what it looks like when you had to gig. Like you had to gig before you even got your deal. Like you had to have a show together. You had to be able to perform. You were doing talent shows. You were doing Hole in the Walls. You were doing whatever you had to do. You were doing, you know, she was on the road all the fucking time.
They talked about that too. Remember, yeah. Patty was like, some of the places was dangerous we was
in. And talk about cooking on hot plates.
But
they really earned their stripes. That was like a real training ground for performance. And I think about stuff like that when I see like a rapper on the BET Awards performing to a dad. Like, I mean, not a dad, but you know what I mean? To a track and not even to a show track, like to your actual
vocals,
track.
Like the song.
With your vocals.
They're playing the song.
They're playing the song and your ass ain't even pretending to lip sync. You just bounce around on stage. That shit still blows.
I would also like to add too, that I think technology has been a part of that, right? Because,
yeah,
you know, shit, you know, nigga, the Temptations, then they go, if Melvin fucked up, y'all had to start over.
Yeah.
it wasn't no You're punch me in.
Right.
Wasn't no punch me in, punch me in. Yes.
Three people in the room.
The nigga, you know, Eddie fucked up. We got to go again.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's how they, and so there's a level of practice. There's a level of 10,000 hours.
Yep, the 10,000 hours.
There is no technology that was able to go in and autocorrect your tone.
Yep.
Right. You know what I'm saying? And so, yes, I do agree with that. And I think that, the other thing I would also like to add is singing was what they did.
Yeah.
There was no, they wasn't modeling Fashion Nova.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't building a brand on IG and selling tummy tea and all that.
They were singing. Now they do all that extra shit.
Yes. But now they sell pies.
They were singing.
That's all you did. You sang. You learned that shit. You came up under somebody that taught you that shit. It was hard to crack into their space. It is why Luther and Patty and Gladys, it's why they only fuck with the singers.
Right.
Yeah. For real.
Fuck with each other.
They fuck with each other because those are the singers. I need somebody to make the arrangement. Y'all call Luther, get Luther in here to get these vocals together. That's why.
That's why.
They knew who had the goods and they knew who didn't.
Yeah, that's real. That's real talk. That's real talk.
Yeah.
And I say to the, you know, the younger cats, like, you know, watch these things or pay attention, man, because, you know, you're watching, you know, genius level talent, you know.
Yeah, I love when Patty started by saying there's 150 years on this stage.
Yeah.
Like, that's that's so crucial to, and we've talked about this on the show before, and, you know, I can't completely blame people in their 20s for not grasping the importance of learning, you know, sitting at the feet and learning lessons, because I probably didn't completely grasp it at that age either. But, like, we losing recipes. Like, I don't know how, we losing recipes, man. Like,
well, I'm going to just say, for
like,
the
it pains me how much, like, now when somebody dies, what I really do think about is, like, all those stories, all that wisdom, like, that we just lost, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Sean,
like,
sorry.
The best
no, that's
part of
fine.
It. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, at 20, I knew James was a bad motherfucker. That's all I knew. It didn't take no genius to know James was a bad motherfucker.
Yeah,
valid.
Fucking beast, man. Jesus. Right. Even used to that stuff, and I was like, what? Like, how did you even think this shit up?
Insane.
Yeah, it's like, how do you even think of this shit? Like, and this nigga's in there like, Barry White, like, this nigga didn't even know how to write
Barry
music.
White came up with whole scores for like 26 piece orchestras, and this nigga couldn't write music.
Yeah, couldn't write music.
But could tell everyone what their sound is. Who's
off? Nah, nigga, that's wrong.
Like, how do you do that? How do you do that?
He's a genius level talent.
I could actually read music, and I can't do that. Like, how? I can't even. Oh my
Marvin
God.
Marvin Gaye to do his vocal singing, but he's laying on a couch.
Just laying down, chilling.
Singing like that.
Chilling.
Laying on a couch. Like, this is, like, again, you know, Michael, we ain't gonna talk about Michael Prince. Like, he's a genius level talent. So, like, if you get a chance to see it in any form, which is why I always, you know, I've always probably, I would see this in a concert, because, like, yo, like, I wanted to see it for real. Like, and you get to see how the level of talent people have or had, the ones that passed away, take advantage of it, because it's special. It don't come around regular. You know what I'm saying? It don't come around regular. But again, you know, the verse was genius. I'm very curious to see who's next. I've been seeing, like, bubbling up a couple of times about Rakim versus Kane.
I've heard that. I would love that.
I'd love that.
I'm gonna just say,
bro. What you say, bro?
I'll say this.
And you gonna end yours?
Well, I've seen Rakim live.
I have to.
I've seen Kane.
Yes.
I had Kane recently too.
Kane much more lends him. Kane's personality lends itself a lot for verses. Yeah.
Kane's a showman.
Rakim, I mean, God bless.
But you know what? It would have to be, Eric would have to be with him on the turntables, I think.
I just hope Rakim, if he does do it, and I definitely would love to see it, I just hope that he's knows that he has to be, you know, gregarious. He just can't be that cool. He has to talk, like, tell some stories. He got him.
Yeah, he definitely got him. Kane's also been doing, and right, and when, and when, you're right, performing. When you can get Rakim out of his shell, like Rakim told this story about him and LL fighting on some tour one time. The story was hilarious, and I was like, look at Rakim got jokes. Who knew Rakim could tell jokes, right? But I want to say it was like a Red Bull session or something. But yeah, Kane's done like Tiny Desk series. He was one, he did an IG live concert early in shutdown, and he was in
prime form. Kane's amazing.
So I would definitely be down for a Kane and Rakim. I would be down for Chris and somebody. I don't know who, you know, like KRS. KRS-One and somebody. Except I don't want to hear Chris talk for 3 hours.
I rescind that suggestion.
Inga, we're gonna let you end it.
Because they'll do it with KRS-One and Chuck, and I don't want KRS-One and Chuck for 3 hours. I'm good. Never mind.
What you gotta say, Inga? What you gotta say about the verses?
When I was a little girl, there was nothing I loved more than if my mom and her girlfriends got together and started talking and forgot I was in the room.
Always the best.
That's what it felt like to me. Like, I get to watch these two women who are my aunties just tell stories and be Black women. And that's like how you learn how to be grown.
I was often, my favorite. None of my cousins were my age. So they were all either like 4 years or more older or 4 years or more younger. And I was my grandparents' only grandchild, but even my other second cousins, third cousins, nobody was the same age as me. So I was often like that only kid that adults forgot was around, which is where I learned my outstanding ear hustling skills, by the way. But you're right. That's exactly what it felt like. And somebody even tweeted like this meme that was like, look at us minding grown folks' business. That was just like...
But that's exactly what we're
doing. Look at us minding grown folks' business. It felt like that. It felt exactly like that.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up on that note. Thank you, Miss Gladys. Thank you, Miss Patty, for a beautiful Sunday night.
And thank you, Tim and Swiss, for understanding that.
And Larry Jackson.
And Tim Poole.
Y'all niggas got Fadi at IG.
Granted, Larry Jackson and them are cutting the check, but and Fadi and IG because they've been getting stepchilded since the Apple Music switch. I want to shout out my mama, who I know is listening, who, while everybody was worried about how they was going to get their parents' tech support, I knew my mama was going to be good because she knows how to get on and off IG Live. She's been doing it ever since D Nice's first big night. I'm very proud of her for her continued tech advancement. I did send her a link because I wanted her to watch it on Apple TV for a better viewing
for the screen, for the TV.
Yeah, but
I did not tell my mother.
Oh, no.
Listen, y'all don't understand what I go through 600 miles away trying
but
to.
But did you not see that I actually asked Versus for the link on Saturday and they put it up on Saturday?
Well, they put it up early.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I got a little pull in the Versus world. But I tweeted because they usually put it up. They usually don't post the link until like 2 o'clock day of or something like that. So on Saturday, I was like, yo, can y'all post the link today?
So we don't have to deal with it.
I don't feel bad about it.
All right, so we'll see y'all next week. Y'all stay safe out there. Wear your mask.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast.